Hello and welcome to the Horror House Podcast. I'm Dave.
And I am Chris. We are two dudes that like to talk about horror movies from real life to the movies and beyond. This week in the Horror House, Dave, you got Jeffrey Combs and Barbara Crampton in my H.P. Lovecraft again.
That seems to be a recurring problem around the late 80s. And it tastes so good.
We're talking from 1986, from Empire Pictures, from Stuart Gordon, from Brian Usna, from Dave.
From beyond.
From beyond. And we're gonna have a little bit of talk about a lot of things tonight. Making of. I have some things I want to touch on. Gonna go into some F00L Moon discussion. For a brief moment.
This is hard heart. Grew three sizes that day.
And if you have not been aware, we're changing some things. We aren't changing some things, but the podcast overlords are. So we're trying to figure out our role in all of that. So we need them listens, man. Give us them listens. Tell your friends to give us them listens. We ain't asking for money. Come on, just click play and go to work.
Organize
and let us play.
Organize a book club at the local library when everyone shows up. Hold them hostage and force them all to get on their devices and listen to the same episode at the same time and stand in the middle so you get this kind of stereo.
Yeah.
Of sound, but also don't do that because I would never tell you to hold people hostage.
Blindfolds go a long way.
Don't need a gun. Just the promise of listening to such a good podcast should keep them enthralled.
But
that's a good point, Chris. The rabble, if you're out there, you could become a vampire, enthrall your victims, and compel them to listen to the Horror House Podcast.
If you want more horror, holy shit. I'm going to edit that. If you want more Horror House, the best way to get more Horror House, Chris and Dave, is to share us around. Listen to everything. Listens, man. Get us them listens, and we will give you the world. Did that sound like horror enough, or do I got to work on that?
That sounded more like creepy,
like sultry
male pirate version of Oprah. Like, yeah, I don't
know. Male pirate Oprah. I've never been
a male pirate Oprah.
Wow,
give us the listens and I'll give you the world, matey.
We are back. It is time to talk from beyond. Dave, I forgot that this actually was a Empire picture, which is kind of pre-Full Moon for everybody that's not kind of up on the thing. Did you know that?
I also had forgot that it had those ties, but I saw it.
Were you like, Chris is going to be pissed?
What have we done for Chris? Yes.
I think at this point, I'm just going to have to let up on my boycott of Full Moon. At least, like, the 80s is clearly, like, something that we like to go and visit a lot. And their footprint is just too big, especially, I mean, if you consider Empire. It's just hard to ignore all that.
Wait, hold up. What's that sound? I believe I hear Charles Band cheering and saying, I got you, bitch.
Got him! but I'm going to... anything modern... I'm going to, unless when you hear that, you'll know we're bought and sold. You're like, oh, they're doing coronavirus zombies. That's when you'll know. Like, oh man, this ain't the Horror House of 2022 anymore. But
sellouts,
which we ain't on board.
When you call us a sellout, I will cry as I jet set around in my private air yacht.
They've listened to our predictive programming episode. They know we're artists, man. We go towards the light.
The truth out there. If we're not around in a month because we pass away under mysterious circumstances, you know.
Yeah. Charlie Band got us.
He is the head of the Illuminati. It's all his plan.
How come, you know, speaking of which, you know, Lloyd Kaufman had, you know, had an appearance in Guardians of the Galaxy 1. But I feel like he's even been in like some other things as like their nod to Lloyd Kaufman, right? I don't feel like Charles Band has really got those kinds of same kind of recognition, weirdly. And believe me, I am annoyed as fuck still over all I have been. But I mean, really? That's good. I mean, apples to oranges, I guess, but it's similar. I was going to say fruits, but that felt kind of offensive. But you know what I mean? Apples to oranges, Charles Band to
right.
Lloyd Kaufman. I'm like, huh.
Yeah, like
he doesn't get that kind of Lloyd Kaufman fanfare to me from what I've seen.
Band never seemed as regular Joe to me. Like Kaufman's clearly motivated. I mean, who's not motivated at some level by money? Like nobody's doing what they're going to do for free,
right?
But
that's a good point.
Kaufman never seemed like that was his primary influence. Where there's a lot of shit, especially as Full Moon progressed, that Band really didn't seem to care about what he was putting out. He just wanted to put it out. He's basically a horror movie slut.
Yes. If it makes him a little extra cash. I think you hit the nail on the head.
No cap to actual sluts.
Do your thing. But so at this time, right? So Empire, what I thought was a little bit interesting. So Stuart Gordon, who obviously we all know Stuart Gordon, him and Brian Usna, Reanimator. This Stuart Gordon is a producer, right? And Brian Usna has kind of taken the reins for his kind of outing. But Stuart Gordon, so a lot of Full Moon, a lot of Empire stuff was filmed in Italy because, you know, the bands had this castle and they just had access to stuff in Italy that they didn't have here, which is, you know, it seems a little criminal, underground kind of stuff. Maybe not, but
is it the family castle, and is that where they filmed Castle Freak?
Yes, I'm pretty sure.
Okay,
I'm pretty sure.
And probably also the Bloodstone.
Yep. Subspecies. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Subspecies.
But so Stuart Gordon filmed this and Dolls at around the same time together in Italy. Dolls released a year later in 87, and of course Empire would close down in 88, which would again of course lead to the creation of Full Moon. And then a year after that, 1989, Puppet Master would release, right, which was clearly influenced by Stuart Gordon's Dolls. If you've not seen Dolls, go check it out if you're into that kind of you know, Full Moon puppet doll rampage kind of thing. It's a clear influence, a clear copycat, I say. But you ain't got to pay a fucking puppet, right? So,
right
there you go. But I thought that I as reading for From Beyond and all of that and got into that, and I'm like, what a train of consequences, if I can rip off Dave Mustaine for a second. But, you know, There, it's all written out right there. Oh, I'm sorry. Stuart Gordon was the director for this. Brian Usna was still the story man. I got that backwards somehow. But
we will forgive you. We'll forgive you.
I felt like it was wrong as I was saying it, and you didn't correct me. So I'm mostly your fault. Okay. Even though it came out of my out of my head. But I had to talk a little bit about Empire and stuff, which, Dave, I am sorry, I will come back to that again later on, but I'm hogging the air with Empire and my ranting, so
well, we're gonna hold you to that coming back around. The opening, let's go straight into the movie and the opening and the the nightmare scenario and
Pretorius.
Pretorius is I mean, he just, even before he transcends or goes to the beyond place and comes back, and is it even really him anymore? Even before that, he's such a sleazy looking dude. Which is great. It's great. He's a great, I felt like he's a great villain even from the get-go. So
there is something about him, like when we first do see Pretorius, I mean, he exudes the sliminess, which given the rest of this movie is perfect, but like this evil doctor aura is all over him.
Even without the makeup and special effects,
he looks
like he's wet.
Yeah, like he's literally just finished with some professionals, and is now talking to you, shirtless and greasy. And it's like, I would do anything I can do to not shake your hand right now, if that's a possibility.
But also with like a vinyl kimono or he's just. It's all around sleazebag, and good on you, Ted Sorrell. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Man, yeah,
because he plays it so straight. It's really great.
Yeah. The first, we get our first like big effect of the movie, that like that clay flesh. I mean, we're kind of skipping past Jeffrey Combs for a second, but I mean, you kind of have to with Ted Sorrell as Pretorius. But I love that effect where like grabbing his shoulder or whatever, and it like Play-Doh just grabs into it. Which is, I mean, not the most gnarly effect of all time, but it works so well because, like, when I even just thinking about it, it makes my shoulders, like, go up because I'm like, ugh, ugh, ugh. I love it. I think it's great. I think it's great.
I do, too. I love how every time Pretorius makes an appearance later in the movie, there's that he's just, his body has degraded further and mutated further into something, you know, still mildly human for a while, but also unknowable and mysterious and just so
greasy, foreign. Still very greasy.
Yeah, always wet. Always. That's the. Yeah. Yes. I watched it and was thinking specifically about how you would look at the effects, I said, "Yeah, there's not a dry effect wet. in the movie. Everything is wet."
That is the best description for these effects. Is wet.
The only effect that seems bad and dated is that, like, when they do the negative colors and they do that kind of effect visually.
The like strobing in between kind of deal.
Yeah, yeah. That was not great.
Yeah.
So, but everything else was really, really solid.
For me,
Jeffrey Combs, his transformation is off-putting and also sad.
I think, I mean, we're going to even talk about some more about Ken Foree after this, because somebody in the whorehouse has had a little bit of a question answer with the man. But the I thought his
question of all time.
I thought his death was like disturbing because like he was like kind of the only good guy. Like I guess you could argue Barbara Crampton, but like she was so
under the influence.
Yeah, but I mean, even her goal was to like, I want you to take me back to this terrible place that you experienced this thing and show me like almost from Jump Street with her character. I'm like, can you fuck off just a little bit, Jesus?
Yeah.
And well, even
when they're fighting over who's going to like have control of what happens with Crawford, the other doctor is like, you'll use anybody to advance your, you know, name and mm-hmm. so
right.
You know, yeah, she's not necessarily a good person.
And then, I mean, we might as well just talk about it and get it out of the way. Well, let's hold on. We'll come back to that. But like the Ken Foree death, great effect. Mm-hmm. I thought the bees themselves were like pretty good. Like a lot of those kind of effects that like involve some kind of green screeny kind of deal, like look terrible, especially at that time. But I don't know what they did.
But you, like he's, you can usually tell, like the actor. I think I'm gonna give it to Ken. Like usually the actor, you can tell they're acting against nothing,
right?
And I thought Ken did a great job. Whether it's Ken or whether it's the special effects department, but
I think it's all of the above in this instance. It's very. I mean, plus we know him from Dawn of the Dead, right? That's certainly the jump for me is Dawn of the Dead from Beyond. And so I remember the first time watching it and I'm like, oh, no, like he can't die. Like he's my man. Like I'm, you know. And so when that happens and good Lord, the aftermath, like he acts it out. So you buy into the aftermath, I think, is what really gets me. Mm-hmm. And whew, goddamn, what an effect.
Ken Foree is, I feel like, forgotten about, easily forgotten about, easily overlooked, but you know, you brought up Dawn of the Dead. We've got him in this. The Rob Zombie Halloween.
Was he in that?
Lords of Salem.
Never seen it.
Also Rob Zombie. So you know,
okay. I mean, he has one of the most iconic lines in horror movie history, which is when there's no more room in hell, right? Mm-hmm. That whole monologue is,
yep,
just amazing. And
he even made it into the 2004 remake, Dawn of the Dead.
That's
the Televangelist. So
yep.
Yeah.
So seeing him here. Do you want to tell the Jersey bit of trivia?
I don't know why it's really the dumbest thing in the world, but he's wearing the jersey, and I wanted to figure out whose jersey he's wearing. So I kind of did some research based on the number, and it does have the last name Brownlee and the colors of the uniform. And I thought, I bet that is Claude Brownlee. Of course, Ken's name in the movie, character name in the movie, is Bubba Brownlee. Claude Brownlee, from Columbus, Georgia, graduate of Benedict College, played for several AFL teams before he finally hit a year with the Baltimore Colts. But I tweeted at Ken and asked him if that was indeed Claude Brownlee's jersey, and he confirmed it. It's the dumbest celebrity interaction of all time.
Like, hey, oh, maybe he's waited the last 30 years for this. He's like, somebody finally asked me.
Yeah, it may be something he's been wanting to get off his chest all this time. But, you know, if you could ask any celebrity like one question, like what would it be? Oh, well, Ken Faree, I want to know whose jersey he was wearing that is totally inconsequential to anything. But
You want to ask him a question about From Dawn of the Dead, right?
No, hold on.
From the 4E's mouth, or fingertips anyways, you got the answer.
And I don't think we talked about it during Dawn of the Dead, but Ken Faree from Indianapolis, Indiana. So
home state represent.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we didn't, but I have the brain of a snail. Hopefully they have terrible brains. If not, replace that with a more terrible animal. Incidentally, let's go back in time a little bit and let's talk about some Jeffrey Combs now, who we've already experienced some H.P. Lovecraft prior, also Stuart Gordon and Brian Usna, kind of in the director story chair for Reanimator, which we will get to. It's going to be a magnum opus, I feel like, when we do that.
Absolutely.
But here we are.
Well, and also we've got Dagon under our belt.
Yes, exactly. I was going to say, Stuart Gordon wanted to do kind of like what Roger Corman did with his Edgar Allan Poe kind of series he did in the late 60s, early 60s. I forget the exact years, but he had a string of Edgar Allan Poe adaptations that he did, and kind of Stuart Gordon was like, oh, I want to do kind of the same thing with H.P. Lovecraft, which he did get his run, in fairness, but it took a little bit longer to fill it out and not as quick as Corman did. But, you know, obviously Reanimator, From Beyond, go back into Horror House archives. You can listen to Dagon, which we talked about a couple years ago now. For the Masters of Horror, he did an adaptation for that as well for one of those episodes. So not the conventional, like what he probably would have preferred, but Stuart Gordon did get his H.P. Lovecraft run. And he's no longer with us. Hasn't been since 2020. RIP, the Gordon man. You killed it. But.
And when he died, David Gordon Green leapt from his abdomen and fully formed.
It's that monkey's paw, like two fingers curled that day.
Somebody wished. I wish we could get Gordon back making movies, and instead of Stuart Gordon, we got David Gordon Green. As a side note for the rabble, I was playing around with the chat GPT AI one day.
Oh, right.
I was asking it to do some things with Dagon, and it basically rewrote Dagon, where Dagon is the hero of the story. It's okay. It's very unique.
Can you give us anything? Can you anything? Like a sonata? Give me something.
No, it's gone. It's gone. It was
an experiment for the moment.
Yeah, it's like not for human ears to hear.
I understand. I did the kind of same thing with Freddy vs. Jason, and like did like a, give me like a wrestling announcer intro to it, but like then it did the whole match, and I'm like, I can't use this. Which makes it sound like we've ever used. Yeah, it makes it sound like we've used ChatGPT for some of our insane shit, but I assure you, we're just insane on our own. We don't need help.
Yeah, I have used it for work a few things, writing some, helping me write some education and things like that. But
fuck that.
I've yet to use it fully on the show. So.
They'll know when it's very apparent and not. It's like that was completely coherent and no slurs at all.
Yeah. And you'll know because there will be no Steve Buscemi references. Like AI. Okay. That is how to tell an AI, if you didn't know. All AI is programmed not to be able to speak of Steve Buscemi. So if you ever hear something talking about Steve Buscemi online, you know it's not an AI.
There you have it.
Take that to the bank and smoke it.
So going back to From Beyond, so of returning again from Reanimator was Combs and Crampton, who were big key factors in Stuart Gordon's first Lovecraft adaptations. I forgot about Castle Freak. That was a Lovecraft adaptation as well, but that was that was almost 10 years later. Also under the Full Moon banner. But that would be, I think that would be the last one that would feature them. But like he got his run in. He got his H.P. Lovecraft run in. He maybe probably wanted some more depth to it, I would assume. You could only, like, as a fan of these stories, like, if I could have done it a little different, I'd have really went for this or something. But he got some of the weirder ones. Like, he really did them. Like, have you ever read From Beyond? I know I've read it, but I can't remember a whole lot about it.
I have not. I know it's only like 7 pages.
Yeah, it's pretty short for some of the Lovecraft stuff, but
right, and especially for some of the themes, like this idea that there is a whole nother reality just outside of our perception, and that it's not totally unfounded idea. Even for solid physical evidence. If you talked about the world of viruses and bacteria, I mean, that is outside of human perception. And yet they are there just waiting to kind of move in and waiting opportunistically for a chance to replicate and sow destruction.
So you don't like those kind of superimposed kind of, I don't really know what to call them, like the fish.
I don't mind. That I don't mind. I mean, it was, considering it was 1986, I thought they were fine. It's the one that where you kind of get that negative image where it's like, you hear, and it goes to that purpley pink negative image. It's almost like they were trying to do like the infrared, like the Predator vision or something like that. I don't know exactly what they were going for. Yeah. I mean, that's, I don't think it, but that's the,
but the other like analogy. Superimposed kind of like images, like the little creatures, you're okay with those.
Thank I'm okay God, with that. I mean, in 1986. I thought they were
okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm okay with that.
Okay.
If they had done those, like the little vagina mouth with teeth, fish floating in the air, and they try to do that practically, it would, I don't know that they would have got enough movement to make them seem
otherworldly,
real or alive or whatever. And having them like a ghostly image, And then they fade when the machine goes off. Like, that kind of matches right. up. So thematically, it seems... I mean, I'm on board. I like it.
So. I was weirdly like some of that kind of to call it CGI feels dishonest, but I don't know what else to really call that for 1986.
I don't think it was done with CGI, was it?
No, I don't think so. But
I think it was a partial fade where they just had.
Yeah, it's beyond my...
that they cropped and then they partially faded it in so it stayed opaque. And
I really don't have any solid understanding of how that kind of thing works. I say that like I know anything, but for 1986, I thought it was. I'm with you on like that negative to positive kind of like strobe kind of thing they did. Like that was a weird. But these, I am again in agreement. Like I thought they worked for what they were. It really.
How about the put this creature kind of, in the basement?
What?
The creature in the basement, like when they go down in the basement, it's flooded, and that giant, like I don't even know what it is, sits up, and it's got, you know, and it attacks. It attacks. Stuart and Bubba, and they have to kill it and turn the power off because Barbara Crampton's, seduced by it. But then later on, like the machine turns itself back on and powers itself back up. But,
oh shit! I know what you're talking about, but it's like not accessing my brain.
It looked like a giant otherworldly king cobra, except instead of a snake, it just had
right.
A bunch of like teeth on its hood, so they kind of had to work together to defeat it. I thought it was cool. I thought it was a cool effect.
Yeah,
so
I'm on the only thing I really effect wise it had it opened up kind of like that kind of like a flowery kind of God, what? There's another monster that looks similar in like that kind of star-shaped.
The Demogorgon?
Yes, yes.
That is, absolutely. That is yep. exactly what, when I saw it, I thought, wonder if this inspired the Demogorgon.
You may be absolutely right. Yeah. And we talked about that just a couple weeks ago with something that I said somebody looked like Natalie Dwyer. I forget what even show we were talking, what we looked at, but here's another one that I think you're right. Like, I can't believe I forgot about this monster because it may be because of the Demogorgon. Jesus Christ.
It's that kind of episode.
Yeah. Made me want to forget, because it's so similar. But that, like, he's trying to start the resonator.
Yeah. Oh. I don't know. I don't. I'm pouring a shot of whiskey, and I had a thought in my head, and it went away.
Let's talk about the pineal gland for a mo.
Sure. An actual organ. It is a real organ, recessed deep, within the brain.
So, I mean, you have a medical background, for those new to the show. I have an idiot background, mostly, so I get a lot of astrology recommendations on video websites and stuff, mostly because a lot of those ladies are very fetching, and I'll watch the whole video, and then be recommended similar things for no other reason than I'm trash-brained. So my understanding is it exists and it's rotten and it's unused and this and that, and you have to think of special numbers to get them to work, to get it to work, the pineal gland. Dave, tell me the truth. Tell us the truth.
I think there is some thought that maybe this was a vestigial organ, like our coccyx was a vestigial tail, or like the appendix was probably some right. kind of vestigial organ. But we kind of know now the The pineal gland is a serotonin-influenced organ that produces melatonin. It's light-sensitive. So that's why when you get into dusk, your brain senses that changing light, produces more melatonin to make you sleepy. It is also, so it influences the sleep cycle that way. It's also believed to be very useful or very involved in our seasonal cycle. So a lot of people suffer from what they call SAD, ironically, seasonal affective disorder, which right. is seasonal depression. You get into the winter months, the fall, the winter months, when there's less sunlight, and then you get into depression because your brains are not, your brains, I don't know how many brains you have, I have 5 3/4, are producing less of those neurotransmitters that that keep your brain on track and prevent you from falling into depression. So it is believed to be that it is often been described as looking like a small pine cone, and there is a belief, and I think there's pretty direct evidence that some of these ancient civilizations, these ancient religions, and maybe even some more modern groups like the Masons or the Illuminati, when they use pinecone imagery, what they're evoking is the awakening of the pineal gland as the third eye, and this
right.
ability to see past the fog of our base reality and into this higher plane of consciousness and be more in touch with, you know, God or gods or
this unseen
nature
reality that From Beyond deals with, like these creatures that we can't have are there all the time, but we don't have a perception of them. And if only our pineapple actually worked, if only. What'd you say?
Pine
porta cone. Potty? Pine cones. Shit. we keep our conspiracy theories to certain episodes, but this is one that would be interesting to do one day. How are you sitting? Like, what do you think on the pineal gland? Or you said it a little bit different than my trash brain does. How's the correct pronunciation?
Pineal.
Pineal.
And I could be wrong. I
believe you more than I believe myself.
So I was a D&D guy back in the days. I still love the D&D, but I played D&D when I was in the elementary schools. And we played in 4th and 5th grade, the school I went to. We had a group that played. When I changed schools in 6th grade and I started going to the Catholic school, I found a new group who wanted to play, and like the first session we're talking and I start talking about chaos. And they're like, "You mean chaos?" Like, no, it's chaos. It's chaos. Like everyone in my old group, we called it that, chaos.
Right.
And yeah, I was a fucking idiot, but I did the best I could, you know.
Yeah.
Fucking English, I pronounced it how it's spelled. So, you know, I don't know what you want from me, English.
I understand.
Anyway. You just made that up. All words are made up. And that is the actual truth. Words only have meaning because we agree that they have shared meaning.
Wow. That's some deep shit. Deep Thoughts with Dave. Can we have the weekly Deep Thoughts with Dave in the Horror House?
If I put the bourbon back like I've been. And then we'll fight in the street. We'll have deep thoughts and then we'll fight in the streets.
I didn't know fighting in the street was going to... Oh, no. Oh, no.
It's okay. False alarm. I'm not at fight in the streets level.
Okay. Thank God. Let's dial it back a little bit. I have some more to talk about the effects of the movie. I'm probably stepping over, like, I felt like you were wanting to go more linear with it, and I'm just jumping all over everywhere because I'm a crazy monkey. I have trash brain.
Let's do that monkey thing.
So I thought that, you know, watching this again, I'm like, this had to be an influence on society, right? It had to be, or it had to have the same effects guy or team. No. So John Carl Beckler, or Beekler, sorry. It's spelled very not how it's pronounced, but it is pronounced Beekler. And you will know him when you see him because he was a big effects guy. He was a big horror guy in the 80s to 90s. And I know we've mentioned him on the show before, but he had a hand in a lot of Empire and Full Moon stuff. Later, Friday and Nightmare films. Also, Troll, Ghoulies, Terror Vision, Robot Jocks to go into later Empire and stuff. Bride of Reanimator. He really was a legend of makeup and really of horror. Like he directed Friday 7, which we just talked last week with Dan Brousseau, who said that was his favorite Friday film, and that was directed by John Carl Beekler. And he did the effects here, and good Lord, are they wet? That is the best description, yeah. Dave, yeah. Yep. Of special makeup effects I've ever heard. Is they are just sopping wet, and freaking dude did some magic, because you can't tell me that society didn't look at this movie. Whoever made society, I don't even remember anymore. And was like, that's what we need to do. We need some of that in what we're doing. Because good Lord, this movie has some disgusting wet effects.
But the 80s were a special time for effects.
Oh, yeah.
But wet and so practical and so visually interesting.
Oh yeah. Dangerous.
And it's not just Pretorius. Like when the pineal gland is popping out of Killing Gow's head.
Right.
Is just so cool. And he just, this is the as far as the Combs character and Combs acting, this is anti-Reanimator, because Reanimator, he's so old. And, like, you can't feel sorry for him throughout Reanimator.
Yeah.
He brings that all into himself. But then you get to this, and Crawford Tillinghouse is such a sympathetic character, even when he's, like, eating a homeless guy's brain and eating the nurse's brain. He's pretty sympathetic.
Sucking her eyeball out.
Yeah.
I really felt sorry for him in those later moments. It's like, we kind of learn his story as it happens, but I was like, oh man, like it's so different than Reanimator, like Herbert West, this character. Yeah.
There's still almost a flatness to the effect, but then it's just goes into totally different directions as far as like empathy for the character. So I feel like it really does show that Jeffrey Combs is actually a solid actor.
Horror fans have always known.
I know we're holding back talking about my beloved Barbara Crampton. We will hold back on that, but
let's talk about her. I mean,
let's go one last special effect, and the end when
to battle Crawford from with
births himself out of Pretorius's mouth.
Yes.
Before he's reabsorbed again. And it's so good. Yes, it can't get any wetter. Yes, it can get wetter and slimier. And it is great. I saw today on YouTube, I saw a clip of a deleted scene from the first time that Barbara and Bubba beat Pretorius, and he kind of, his head splits open, and then he decapitates himself, and Ken Fury shoots him a couple times, and juice is pouring out of the neck, and it's great. But even then, there's so much moisture, but there still doesn't, the entirety of the ocean is not as moist as the effect when Crawford is forcibly burns himself out of Pretorius's.
Italy had a for sure drought of KY jelly that summer of filming.
Sure. KY jelly was hitting like $11.95 a gallon, though.
Dude.
Or for those little tubs that comes in.
To briefly go back to Giancarlo Beekler, so he also worked on a little Nightmare on Elm Street film, which I know you've seen, Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare. You remember that 3D part, right? Like she's going into the shit and you put your 3D glasses on. First horror movie I ever saw in the theaters. That's my sister's fault. She took me. But when that happens, the three dream demons, right, that appear to Freddy, do those look like anything to you in this movie? A little bit.
Now that you say that, maybe they could be the vagina bit. Worms, floating vagina worms.
A little bit.
A little bit. So
I've never seen anybody draw that conclusion. I'm sure we're not the first, but I was like, huh.
Also known as the worst fucking thing to ever happen to Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, God.
So
we'll get there one day, maybe. God. God.
I just got cold chills thinking about how
when they're from another dimension, like from beyond, it's kind of cool, but when they're dream demons, like, piss off.
Out of nowhere, too. There's no, like, lore or mythos or Easter eggs that point this way. It's just,
it's
like,
so weird. It's
okay, so weird. What's next? Demons from another world. But
dream gods.
Like worms. But we'll take our inspiration from the floating worms with vaginas with teeth.
Yeah, I wish Giancarlo Beekler hadn't passed away a couple years ago, because it'd been great to have him on to just be like, were those the same fucking things? I gotta know. The world may never know. If you know, please let us know. But yeah, I was like, those are strangely similar. Yeah.
I never put that together till just now, but yes, I'm on board.
Prime material for a Daveverse connection one day. Just saying, if you need them as a last minute,
I'm going to file that away.
But I don't know how to pronounce his name. How do you pronounce it?
Crawford Tillinghast.
I see Tillinghast, I'm just gonna say Jeffrey Combs and Pretorius, when they, you know, the whole fight, it devolves or evolves potentially into what what I think is two skeleton penises biting each other.
Oh, okay.
And it's great. It's fucking great.
All right. You know, who doesn't love a good dick grabbing contest?
Yeah, all like right. I'm a skeleton penis. You're a skeleton penis. We're gonna bite each other to death, and so it has been foretold.
as it was in the before times, as it shall be in the end times.
Let's talk about Barbara Crampton, because she is. Let's talk
about Barbara Crampton. Yeah,
we've kind of I've went very effects heavy. That is my fault as the effects geek.
Oh, that's okay. But the beautiful Barbara Crampton.
I would almost say eternal at this point, because she is still kicking it, still killing it. She is.
She's got 4 movies coming out. 3 are full on horror, and 1 is horror action. I'm really looking forward to Suitable Flesh, and it's almost a hatchet situation. Speaking of John Carl Beckler, because I know nothing about it. I know almost nothing about it, and I'm all in. But
what you do know is enough. Wife. Yeah,
I love Jacob's Wife
with Mr. Phil CM Punk Brooks. Which I didn't realize, and there it was. I'm pulling the light off Crampton again. My apologies, Barbara.
No, that's
okay. I call you Barb.
That's okay.
I had to call that out.
Really showed. My I think boy. Jacob's Wife really showed her acting ability more than some of the stuff she did in the
80s. Is it a vampire flick?
Yep.
Because that's the one still image that I've seen of that.
Yeah, like repeatedly. She's the preacher's wife in a vampire flick. Oh, and okay. It's great. It's about
the horror women's world.
Empowerment and not having to stay silent and you don't have to give up yourself. You don't have to choose. You can be a strong, independent woman and still be, you know, in a happy, loving situation. And I mean, that's not to okay. be too woke. I don't, you goddamn woke motherfucker.
Go woke, go broke.
Goddamn woke hot dog motherfucker. Woke mustard. but it really is good. I did enjoy it. It's not the scariest thing in the world, but it's got plenty of tension and plenty going on. Barbara still is got it, acting and beauty and in From Beyond specifically. That BDSM outfit, which I know he had the backstory where he was into that. It just happened that the suit left behind is exactly her size. I mean, but
and then some.
That is a tiny thong on that white booty.
But this goes into the pineal gland thing again. Like, it's somehow some kind of governor of your inhibitions in a way. And when you can access that gland properly, then you can just be as sexy as you need to be in whatever moment you choose for yourself.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that from a scientific standpoint.
You got the wrong man.
If the pineal gland controls melatonin and that controls your sleep patterns, when are you most uninhibited? In your dreams, in your sleep. Like, reality has no meaning. You can be anything. And so you are without inhibition. So I mean, it kind of it fits.
You're tapping into that subconscious, maybe. Like, you're that barrier to where you can let those kind of the wildness of your dreams infect reality.
Oh.
Or not even affect it, just be. Like, I'm, you know, Barb Crampton, her character is like, you know, I'm going to slip into this fucking number. And so she fucking does.
Yep.
And
I mean,
that's why I'm proud to be American.
If she wanted to come to North Vernon and, you know, spend the night with us and slip into something more comfortable, I mean, you don't have to climb on top of me. She can climb on top of Stella. I'm okay with that, too. So I have to make sure Stella doesn't listen to this episode. That's all.
That's I don't know where to go from here, but I'll do my best. I'm just going to drink.
Especially since Stella knows, like, you know, Barbara Crampton I like, but she's not my girlfriend. Right now it's Melania Vantrobe, the AT&T girl, is my current girlfriend, and Stella's okay with that. But, you know, if I threw Barbara Crampton in and Linnea Quigley in on top of that, I don't know how she'd feel if I had
your girlfriend. Yeah, but you're starting a stable of girlfriends, which I would say never ends well, but I really don't know.
I'm sure it doesn't. I'm not cut out for this.
But Barbara Crampton does great in this. Very different than her role in Reanimator, which I think in Reanimator she's very helpless, very there to be the screamy kind of queen that,
right,
you know.
She's an obstacle in the plot. She's not driving the plot anymore.
Yeah. And this one, she's a doctor, a scientist. She's like the crux of, she's like, I'm the vehicle moving this story forward.
Right. She's the reason they go back to the house. She's the reason the machine gets turned.
What a bitch, by the way. She is a straight bitch. She's like, you just experienced the scariest, fucking horrifyingest, most worst thing you've ever experienced. Killing guest. What I'm going to do is I'm going to grab you by your nuts and I'm going to drag you back to that same house. And I want you to do it again, but just because I want to see.
And she's also like the one that brings an end to it, ultimately.
So
she's got some, she might be related to Loomis, because like she gets blown up in that house. Yeah, she jumps out. That is, you can't even tell me that's the second floor window. That house was big.
Right.
She's in the fucking attic. And she gets exploded out the window and she's just like, I'll shake it off. I'll be okay.
But then she laughs kind of maniacally, right? So maybe she's still seeing some of those things from beyond, perhaps.
And maybe she did off camera get inseminated by Crawford Tillinghast, because Full Moon Entertainment has another movie, Resonator, Miskatonic University. It's Crawford's son, right? Resurrecting his experiments, resurrecting that?
I have no idea what the story actually is.
That I believe that is the story, is that Crawford's son is the main character driving the experiments in this one. And so maybe it's Crawford's son with Dr. Catherine McMichaels, because there's no other like love interest for Jeffrey Combs in the movie.
Hey, Pretorius seems like he'd have been down if you talked to him, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I ain't talking bad about Pretorius, but he just seems slimy enough. He's like, I've got my own lube. Like, what are you fucking talking about? Let's go.
Got his own lube. He looks like he's made of lube at
times. The last thing I want to say about Pretorius, and it's another James Gunn reference, I swear. But you know when he's attacking Crampton before they're stabbing that snake creature thing? He looks awful. Well, he doesn't look like, but Michael Rooker looks a lot like Dr. Pretorius from Slither 2006. You know, think of him kind of side by side if you can. There's a little bit of resemblance when Rooker gets that, when he becomes the embodiment of that kind of creature, and then to see those like Pretorius, some of my least favorite shots of the movie is those like tight to hide his neck and his body, because they couldn't really edit that out. But when it's those tight headshots, are very Slither. Slither had to be influenced by those. Had to be. I will accept no substitution.
I will accept that.
It's so there. James Gunn, when you get a little break on Superman and stuff, love to have you on. You got a little history with Lloyd Kaufman, you know? Come help some indie bros out. We're just talking horror.
Yeah, come on, let's do it.
But
I think Michael Rooker does seem like a super interesting guy because he does. Merle from Walking Dead, but he also chooses roles that you don't always expect. He takes them in directions you don't expect.
Henry, so. Portrait of a Serial Killer, which I've honestly not seen a whole lot. My wife has watched the whole thing. I've not watched the whole thing because I fell asleep because I'm weird, but.
It's on a lot of people's like most disturbing list. And
yeah.
I know I watched it once back in the day, but I don't remember like that. Of course, I mean, we watched Faces of Death, Trace's Death, Shocking Asia, Mondo Asia, Mondo Magic.
That may be it. Like, this ain't fucking shit to me. Like, fuck off. But in the context of just a regular movie, like, we might have to revisit that in the horror house. But any final words on From Beyond before we hit the sad and then get to our ratings?
If anybody out there has not watched this, please watch it. I do think that we are in agreement there. This is worthy of a watch even today. Like it.
Yeah.
That's the good thing about practical effects. Practical effects stand, when they're done right, they stand the test of time way longer than CGI. I've watched movies with CGI effects from just 5 years ago, and it's like, oh, that has aged horribly.
Yeah.
And then you can watch a movie with practical effects from 86 and say, okay, that's okay.
That's wet.
That is wet. That is a lot.
All right. So. Well, we will be right back after these messages for our ratings and review.
From Beyond, 1986, a stellar cast: Jeffrey Combs, Barbara Crampton, Ken Foree,
Ted Sorrell, Brian
Usna, Stuart Gordon, Charles Band, this is something. It definitely should be watched, and it is time, Chris, for us to give it our overviews.
My body is ready. My pineal gland is ready.
It is ready. It's bursting forth from your forehead. like a tiny hard-on out of your brain. It's a brain hard-on.
The worst kind.
Worst kind. They never go down. I did take a guess at your rating.
Should we give both of our guesses at the top? Just see how... Do you think? Tell me yours. I'm guessing an 8 out of 10 for you.
Okay. And I guessed a 7.5 out of 10 for you.
Okay.
All right. So do you want to go first? Do you want to go second?
You go ahead and go first, and then I'll go.
Okay. So like I said, the cast, the writing, the director, the lineage, the H.P. Lovecraft story, the themes. I love themes that make me think, what if this is real, or how could this, and then we talked about the very real possibility that things could be unknown. There's so much we don't know, and if people who believe in multiverses, they all exist, maybe even very closely on top of each other. Maybe that's this quantum tie that quantum mechanics works on in string theory, is these strings extend from universe to universe as these universes are stacked on top of each other and right there. And could we find a vibration that opens that up and brings these together, or lets us peer from one to another? It's such good story. Such wet practical effects that stand the test of time, and Barbara Crampton. So I was going to give this a 7.5, and I feel like I'm not going high enough, but I did not give it a 7.5, Chris.
Really?
I gave it an 8 because I had to give it a whole extra point for Barbara Crampton
and
that BDSM suit and all that goodness. So fair. You were right on the money.
That is fair. So, unfortunately, Dave, I was right. You were slightly wrong. I gave this a 7 out of 10.
7.
Because I didn't connect with the story as much. I think that's the key difference. Because okay. I certainly connect with the slimy, weird, fleshy, wet effects right there with you. But the story to me just didn't really connect super hard. But I like ideas that it presented. I think some of those ideas are very cool. Like there, like right now, like there could be a skeleton penis right by my eyeball, and I wouldn't even know. How would I know? I think
they
that's
could even
funny
be trying to bite your penis skeleton.
Yeah, but like for me, the story to me is just kind of whatever. It's just a vehicle to get the effects to happen. And I really wasn't invested as much as I would have liked to have been, but it's not bad, obviously. And good Lord, the effects, to mention the effects again. And it's not my favorite Lovecraft adaptation. It's not my least favorite either. It is certainly the slimiest, certainly the wettest. Their KY budget was untouched until Society, at least. I'm still shocked, really, that Society, that wasn't Beekler doing that.
There wasn't a more direct connection.
Yeah, I am very shocked. But hey, that I'm still giving you 100% credit because that was very close of a guess. But there it is. What's the average of 7? Is it 7.5? Is that what our
7 and 8 average to a 7.5? So very respectable.
Yep.
So,
Stuart Gordon is pleased with his work, and I'm sure we'll do Castle Freak. I'm sure we will do that episode of Masters of Horror. Was it Shadow over Innsmouth? I forget the episode that he did for that. That was Lovecraft oriented, but it did not have the Crampton. It did not have the Combs. It was another decade, at least later. I'm not very familiar with them.
Was it Innsmouth or was it like? Okay, we'll figure that out. We'll figure that out.
Yeah, there's. We'll probably get through the whole run in some fashion. Before the end of Horror House, I am sure. So, we've already done Dragon. Do you mean Dragon?
Dagon, man.
Dragon? Go listen to that episode, which we did a while ago. If you want to tell us some of your thoughts on From Beyond or H.P. Lovecraft or any of these Stuart Gordon adaptations, let us know. Dave, tell them where they can let us know.
You can...
Was that too dramatic?
With a direct message, or you can just tag us in a tweet at sweetness1 with 6 E's or at whorehouse2 because there are two of us.
You can email us whorehousepodcast@gmail.com, the Whorehouse page on Facebook, or you can, Dave.
You can leave us a voicemail on anchor.fm/whorehouse.
And finally, if you aren't down with the Satan, you can send us a message. You just said
or,
that.
Or maybe if you are.
God, you can send your fucking applications to replace Chris on Horror House to dave@whorehouse.com. Share us. because Lord knows Spotify don't know what to do with a podcast right now. Especially one as cool as Horror House. So,
And as a special bonus, you could hit us up on Slasher, the social media
app
for horror fans. I am
both there.
Horror House Dave.
I am Horror House Chris because I copied you.
What?
I recopied. I had to edit it and fix it. Yeah. But I was like, that's a great idea. Hit us up on Slasher if you're on there, and spread the word, man. We're just after some listens, man. After some listens, you know, couple good old boys, but not those good old boys.
Just a good old boys, never meaning no harm.
Beat on. Just talking about some Crampton.
Been in trouble with Spotify law. So we get enough listens.
And we will be back next week with maybe something a little Carpenter might be able to help fix.
Ooh. Well, very nice.
That's actually not what it is, but...
Carpenter and Kurt Russell, and we'll leave it at that, and don't be mad at us.
Goodbye. Good Lord, I'm ruining everything. This is the worst outro I've ever been a part of. And it's, oh God, I'm the worst.
It is what it is. Take it or leave it.
Oh, God.
Please take it.
Is that my time to talk?
That is your time to talk now.
You can email us, horrorhousepodcast@gmail.com/Satan.
What?